This episode of How Is Your Run Today is being sponsored by PathProjects.com. Visit www.pathprojects.com.
This episode of How Is Your Run Today was recorded remotely and safely. We hope soon we'll be back at the WGBH studios at the Boston Public Library, just steps from the finish of the greatest marathon in the world, the Boston Marathon. But until then, wear your mask, stay 6 feet apart, and be safe. And now, without further ado, here are Brian and Peter.
Brian, the days of August are ticking away here.
Oh, don't say that.
Well, because it's true.
Every day is an opportunity to work on the How Is Your Run Today 31 Days of August challenge, which people are doing.
I'm calling it the 31 Days of Challenge. Is that bad?
I'm calling it HWYRT August, hashtag HWYRT August.
Oh,
we never really did settle on a name.
I know. So.
If you know what's going on, you know.
Yeah, the people who know.
I mean, come on.
Tell me what you're finding. What are you learning about yourself? Because I'm learning a few things about myself.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm learning. I am learning that when a certain listener from Japan sends you a Facebook Messenger video of their running coach running in a trail in Japan, and you see that happening, Dave Macklem, and you're like, yeah, that's so awesome. I happen to be running right now. I'm going to take a picture of me running on this trail in Concord, Mass, the battle road, and then we'll be around the world communicating with little 12-second videos of each other running around.
Yeah, what did you end up doing?
Well, I took a 12-second video of running, and it was very similar to the one he had sent, and I'm like, cool, togetherness, global community, social media, free service, and I throw my phone back in my backpack, keep running, and then I start getting these beeps and buzzes and vibrations, and I pull it out. And our friend, listener, Dave Macklem in Japan is calling me on Facebook and I'm trying to answer it and it's not happening. And I throw it, I'm like, okay, I throw it back in my bag. Minute later, same thing.
Again?
Why can't I answer this? And then I see a note saying, my wife and kid are asleep. It's kind of not a good time to talk here on the other side of the planet, on the other side of the world. And I'm looking, it's like, Oh, I called him. Oh, wait, I sent him 400 pictures.
Yes, you did.
Of a
of your
guy
run.
On a tractor.
Yeah, you created.
Which I had taken the day before.
Yeah, you created like a GIF of a guy on a tractor.
So his scroll, if he opens that conversation, is literally hundreds of the same picture.
Oh, I know, because he sent it to me right afterwards as it was happening.
And then he just wrote very, very slyly and smartly. He just wrote, keep on running.
I told him he should print them up and make a flip book.
But nothing would happen. It'd be the most boring flip book ever. So I felt horrible.
No, and I immediately apologized.
Waking his family up and everything. It has nothing to do. You did nothing, Peter. I'm glad
I apologized on your behalf.
As 51% of HWRT, I'm glad you apologized.
I'm only 49, but I will say that what I apologized for was that you were slippery and sweaty and weird and you had running brain and one should never operate technology. We're lucky we can get our watches to work pre and post run. In fact, the most dangerous time, especially after a 2 or 3 hour run, is to hit save on your watch. I'm always about to hit delete.
So terrified.
It's terrifying.
And then I get the thing, if I don't do it right away and it starts buzzing and telling me it's like going to sleep. And I'm like, oh no, don't do that. Anyway, I want to say my apologies to Dave. I don't know what happened. I didn't actually do anything. I just put the phone in the little pocket and it started sending things across the globe unfortunately, the same picture over and over and over again, and calling Dave. Like, my phone wanted to talk to Dave Macklem.
He thought you were working on like a stop motion animation thing.
And I thought he was trying to call me, and I couldn't. I'm like, old man, figure out how to use your phone. So that was very frustrating.
You just need to leave the phone at home. I need you to change your ways.
Well, you know, with the backpack, it's nothing to throw it in there. And these days, I don't know, with the COVID and everything, I feel like I need to have, just in case of emergency, maybe I need to like...
just angry scroll on Twitter while you're running. Right. Yeah, I hear you.
Right. You know, I don't know.
What anyway, are you
that's
learning
not part
about
of the
yourself.
Challenge at all.
What are you learning about yourself?
Even I, who pay a lot of attention about hydration, still it requires work for me to drink 90 or so ounces of water during the day, because I get to a point where I'm like, I'm fine, and I'm not fine. Well, and it makes a huge difference.
Well, can I ask a question about that?
Yeah.
We're only supposed to do that one day a week, right?
Well, you can do whatever you want. You can do it every day. You can.
I know, but it actually takes effort.
Yeah.
To put 100 of ounces of water into this body.
Challenge is a word that means challenge, my friend.
I get that. I'm saying I wasn't supposed to start that days 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
There's no supposed to.
No, I'm saying because tomorrow is my water day.
Great.
I just haven't gotten there yet.
I did mine early. I also slept unintentionally for longer than 8 hours and thought I had checked something off the list and realized, no, that's next week.
I did a thing last night where I
went back to bed for 2 hours.
Good for you. Wait, we're not doing the sleep thing right now? Can I do it now?
You can do whatever you want. I'm actually going to have trouble with this one.
Yeah.
Do a run in a place or time you don't normally do.
I've already done it.
What was yours?
Mine was dropping the car off of the mechanic and running back.
Okay.
Because I don't usually run from where we used to actually go to work to my home at 8 a.m. I'd go the other way, but I've not really done that run on a weekday morning, 8 a.m., coming the other way. That was my 3-miler the other day. That was my recovery run. I banged that out early.
My running, both times and places, are pretty varied. Although,
no, you got to get in the car and you got to go somewhere else.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go somewhere I don't normally run and do that. I mean, I have been doing the track, but you know, I've done that 3 weeks in a row, so that's not a new thing now at this point.
You need to go scout out some of the route for our makeup marathon ultra in October.
Well, maybe I will slip into Boston early in the morning and run a route there that I haven't done in a long time.
That's a whole other subject. We can't get into that. Tell me, have you watched your movie yet?
I did. I watched a movie.
Wait, should we go to the movies?
So, as my wife will tell you, you know, the artist in residence, Andrew Bonnie Gould, anytime I get the clicker in my hand, and we have one of those that you can talk into and say, look up, you know, I always say something
it's
like...
It's called a phone.
No, it's a little remote. It's a little remote.
I'm teasing you.
That I used to call Dave Macklem.
Exactly.
In Japan by accident.
There it is.
Constantly.
Perfect setup. Thank you.
I need an app that shuts my phone off. App that up. Let's app that up. Thank you. Okay, so what?
I had a salad for lunch.
Man, we're good at this. No, what I do is I always pick it up and I say, movies about ultra running, or show me movies about running. And everyone groans or leaves or then takes the remote control out of my hands. So I watch a lot of those. I watch a lot of like 5-10 minute running movies. I watch a lot of long ones, but I watch something called Great Himalaya Trail High Route. And it was about this guy, his wife did about, I don't know, a third of it with him, but she did a lot of the logistics and stuff like that. And he was trying to do basically a marathon a day up and down unfathomable heights up in the Himalayas, 40 days of it. And the trials and travails of that. The footage is beautiful. It was an incredible accomplishment, but it actually left me really saying, what did I just watch for the last 20 minutes? Because I didn't learn anything about, he goes to these villages that no one is going to go to. You know, very few people have been there. And we don't learn anything about the people that live there. We don't learn anything really about the area that he's running through, or even what his training or difficulties were. It's really just a lot of visuals, and then it ends. So in some ways, it was great to see the footage and the scenery, but I really felt like a lot more could have been, because I'm never going to get to the Himalayas probably and check those areas out. And I would like to, maybe it's just me, you know, but I wanted a lot more. And who am I to say? I'm not going to provide a film like that anytime.
No, maybe Emmy award-winning filmmaker Greg Shea might.
Right, correct. Yeah, he would be the person to do that. That's true.
Right. Now, as important as it is to know what movies you watched, I can tell you that I have yet to watch my movie. So I'm going to do my water day tomorrow, and mm-hmm. my movie day is Friday.
Okay.
I want to tell you that I'm really enjoying the journaling more than I thought I would. I went into this with a little bit of journal phobia.
Talk about that.
I know I should write more in general. Mm-hmm. And I don't make time for it. And, you know, it's that whole thing like, I don't have time to run. Well, you got to make the time. Well, I don't have time to journal. Well, you got to make the time. And what I do in the morning is usually I start writing before I go do the run, mm-hmm. just a little bit, just to set the scene. And then I do thoughts afterwards. Sometimes it's right afterwards. Sometimes it's hours later. And I think I get more out of it if I wait, because mm-hmm. there are moments that are happening on the run that I start hitting, especially longer runs. I start hitting that moment of, oh, this is why I'm doing this. This is why. Mm. And then I can process it a little bit longer. It's been very good for me. I really enjoy it.
Well, that's good to hear. I'll be very interested to hear from you and from others as we make it further through the month, if that continues and gets deeper. You know, sort of it's like a muscle, right? So
yeah,
as you're journaling more and more, if you're that much more reflective or looking that much more sort of either inward or outward, once you start that journey, you keep going further and further and further. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Does that make sense?
It does. And some of the things I was supposing going into it, because we often have that thing about why do you run? And you have that on your list, right? Of why am I running? What is it about running that's important to me? Why? And I've been really, really, really going out of my way to meditate on that question while running. And I get different answers different days. It's fascinating. So yeah, I would go with you that it's the muscle that you work and the answers you're getting evolve. So right. I appreciate that part of it.
Well, you want to talk about next week, even though this week's not over?
Well, I think it's important for people to know, because this is going to be the show that they'll listen to as they're prepping for the next week. So what's on tap that's different?
Well, same but different are another type of SAM Phase 1 Hard, which you would yep. think you're supposed to do, you know, when you're doing this whole regime, you do the easy ones after an easy workout and the hard ones after a hard workout. And you would think that after a hard workout, you get the easier exercises. No, there's more exercises and it's a little harder, little counterintuitive there. So get ready for those. Number two is the sleeping. So for people who get tons of sleep and love being in bed and just vegging out, this isn't going to be hard. For a lot of people, 8 hours of sleep, they haven't seen that since they were 10 years old. And this is going to be harder. But I think, and as we'll hear from our upcoming guest, Dr. Sachs, sleep and enough sleep and consistency and quality sleep is very important for overall health, especially given the time we're living in now. So give that one a shot. And if you can only sleep for 6 hours, spend 2 hours just lying there. No phones, no reading.
You could do your journaling if you needed to. Or do you really want people just to be in their head?
It's not about being in your head. It's about not denying the sleep your body may need. Now, I'm no sleep expert. I know nothing. There may be people that can live to 110 sleeping 4 hours a night. I'm just saying there's a body of evidence out there, a body of research out there that's saying many people, like being dehydrated, are also somewhat chronically sleep deprived. So give it a shot. What is one night going to do?
What do you get to lose?
On a night before a race, all of us sleep 2 hours, you know, and that happens every once in a while. This time, try to make it eight or more.
Try to sleep like you just ran that race.
There you go. A couple others. Find some post-run stretches or foam rolling, especially if that's new to you, and work that in. You know, you don't have to love it. You don't need to keep it, but give it a shot. That's what this is all about. Now, the next two, you're going to have to plan these out in your week. You're going to have to think about this.
Okay,
okay, give Peter, me. I'm talking to you.
I know you are.
All right. One is, this is an activity related or a running related activity, complete in time of 5K. So, you know, we really only have a few specific running activities in this challenge. And this is one of them. And we're going to do this twice. We're going to do it now in week two, and we're going to do it again in week four. And part of it, of course, is to see if you improve or whatever, but that's less important than just doing it. Time yourself in a 5K. And if you're at the point where you're walk running right now, walk run a 5K. Who cares?
Heck, just walk a 5K because you're going to be able to time it later on again. Like,
that's
just
right.
Just get out there. Because I know a lot of people who are doing just the walking.
Sure.
And you know, a 5K distance for a walk, that is a good distance. Time it, see how you do. And it's just data. And we're going to compare it later on with that second set.
And you're going to journal about it. So, you know, everything is an experience during this challenge. And the next one's kind of fun, but it's actually, for me, it's quite intimidating. And it is review and edit your running gear. That's clothes, hats, masks these days, hydration packs, sneakers, socks, everything. And we're about to change seasons. So it's not just throw on the tank. It's not just throw on the sports bra or the t-shirt. Now we're getting into everything else you're going to be wearing for the next 6 months. And I don't know. I have some nice new Path Project stuff. I'm psyched about that.
But I've been meaning to talk to you about my Path Project hat.
You talk a lot about this hat.
Well, remember a couple shows back, I said, I don't even wash it. Okay. Well, after I did the back-to-back 13, 15, 15. Okay. So I got to the place where I felt it was important. Yeah. It wasn't bothering me.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, it might have been offensive because I'm an offensive person. So I ended up washing the hat. I washed it cold, gentle, air dry. That baby looks brand new now, like nice. As if I've never worn it. It fits perfectly. It keeps me so cool. I can't get over it. It's my favorite hat.
I'll tell you this. I ran in a regular baseball hat on one of these hot days, and the sweat was enormous, and the discomfort was so much. And I usually don't think about, you know, I'm not thinking about that, but, and I thought, what? He's going on. And I realized the Path Project hat that I have is so light. It is so filled with air.
Yes.
You know, it's so full of air pockets. And yet the brim, depending on the time of day, I don't even have to wear sunglasses. You know, it does the job. You know, it shields my face.
It does the job.
But allows me to throw off all that heat. And just a regular baseball hat, I'm talking one with like mesh in the back, was so burdensome in comparison. No, it was crazy.
And the Path Project hat, the brim, so it has like a sweatband built in, which is amazing. And it actually pushes all that sweat away from your head and out the brim.
Yeah.
Like it goes all the way to the edge. It's amazing.
It really, their stuff is performance wear. Yeah. It's gear. You know, we talk about gear.
It is gear.
This is really gear. So what we're talking about is look at everything. And I'm chronically have not enough sneakers going on. And that, you know, I try to keep it at a minimum at like, okay, these are things I need for this time of year. These are things I need for this time of year. But Peter, I'm still running in some race shirts from like races I don't even remember.
Dude, I have socks from 6 years ago. I'm not kidding. They got to go.
I have shirts from 5Ks from like, I'm like, when's the last time I ran a 5K that I paid
for?
That's
got to go.
So, I'm not even going to give it the nose test. I might wash it really well and send it to prop runner Erin Keller and have her make masks out of it. She is a mask making guru right
she's
now.
She's a mask maven. She's getting it done. She just sent us, she was so generous and sent the HWYRT team some of more of her hand fashion masks. These are higher end. These Mach 2 versions she sent.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't be more thrilled. I wish everybody luck on week two of the challenge. Remember, this is about you, and it's about you trying to get out of it what you want and to push yourself into a place that's a little different for yourself in a bunch of different areas. And we want to go out of our way and say, don't do anything that's too hard. I mean, if you're not feeling it, if you're physically limited due to an injury, or you just mentally don't have it, that's totally okay. We just hope you're at least doing the journaling and following along, because we're getting such good feedback from people.
Yeah. And you know, take the stat chat. Oh my goodness. Did you see Corinne Griffiths, Boston's running unicorn?
She's the best.
Did you see her journal book? Holy macaroni.
So good.
It's amazing.
So good.
She needs to sell those. I just want to say one more thing before we get to our guest. And that is, the tank tops are being worked on. We haven't forgotten about them. A lot of people are saying, yes, I'm so psyched
for
these August Challenge tank tops.
We're in
design.
Yep.
It's going to happen. I can't say it's going to happen immediately, but hopefully by the time we reach the end of the challenge, they'll be available to order. That's what
There's a really strong chance that before the 31st day of August happens, people will have a chance to place an order.
That's right.
Brian, you alluded to our guest, and just before we talk to him, if you could join me into the medical tent.
I need a run. 10 cc's of running stat.
Oh no, Peter, are you injured? Is that why we're
I am here? Not, sir. I am doing fine, and I hope you two are well, and I hope our listeners are well. And hopefully our next guest will go a long way in keeping people feeling well. We're going to be talking to Dr. Paul Sachs, an epidemiologist out of Brigham and Women's Hospital, and he has a lot to say about exercise, outdoors, and some COVID-19 information in general. And he was very pleasant to talk to.
Peter, I don't want to kiss dispersions on any of our last 200 plus episodes or the people therein.
Yeah.
But he's a real medical doctor, correct?
He's actually really a medical doctor, not the way you and I aren't. he is, and I go out of my way and ask a question of him. You're going to hear that is clearly evident that I'm not a medical doctor and that he is. Would you agree that that's true?
That's not where you put the stethoscope.
Oh, dear. Anyway, tongue depressor. Anyway... Without further ado, let's go check into our conversation with Dr. Paul Sachs. I believe we're being joined right now by Dr. Paul Sachs. Thank you so much for coming on to our silly show about running, and we look forward
to do it. I would say I'm kind of a failed runner. I mean, I used to be a very enthusiastic runner, and then I found started finding it incredibly boring.
Was it an age issue or just a I don't like doing this anymore issue?
I don't like doing it anymore, but I just find other forms of exercise much more interesting. But I did run the New York Marathon, a very interesting story. I ran the New York Marathon in 1979, and I ran it by crashing it. You could actually do that back then. Mm-hmm. I was running a lot then. So I had been in a 10K race, and I had a little thing that looked like an official race jersey. And I wore it, and I walked in, and I ran it.
Well, how old were you? You must have been like 19 or 20.
Yeah, 19.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, my goodness.
That's awesome.
How many people were running the New York City Marathon at that time?
I don't know.
70s.
Not as many as now.
I mean,
I don't even know if the course was the same. Do you remember? Did you end in the park?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And did you start on the bridge?
Yes.
So, okay, maybe it's, I know they've changed some of the interborough stuff a little bit subtly, but that's, and you, have you ever run Boston?
No.
Kind of a dream or done? No.
Done. And you know, that ship has sailed. And the other thing is that you can't crash them anymore. You have to qualify.
No, it's that's really right. Hard now, boy. Yeah. You can't just walk into that one. No.
Well, just as in way of introduction, that's Peter and I actually started doing this podcast, but also running later, like 20 years later in life, right? Wait, 30 years later? How old were we when we did the marathon, Peter?
We were 44, and we started training for when we were 43.
Yeah, wow. So we kind of said, we had an opportunity sort of presented to us, and we both kind of said, well, yeah, by the time I'm 45, it would be good to run the Boston Marathon. That's an accomplishment. And we both did it as charity runners. Neither of us are fast enough to qualify, but we haven't stopped since. So almost the opposite
Well,
story.
You know, I actually do love exercising. It's just, mm-hmm. it's running. I run when I can't find another form of exercise to do.
So was New York your biggest race that you've done?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And the only marathon?
The only marathon. I have run in several other not very competitive, not very important races, but they're mostly in my 20s and 30s.
And when did you pick tennis up?
When I was in my late 30s, I was 39, and I got, my wife and family and I were at a resort, and I decided to just on a lark, join the tennis tournament, and I had to borrow a racket, and I enjoyed it so much that I couldn't stop talking about it for like a whole week. And so my wife then for my 40th birthday got me a tennis racket, a nice tennis racket. And I've been playing ever since. So
that's great.
It's just, I mean, it was really kind of it came to me late and it's my favorite activity.
Well, similar to running, do you find that almost 20 years in, are you better at it? You're more proficient. Are you smarter?
Yes, oh, absolutely, yeah. Which is shocking for any physical activity as you go through middle age to get better at something physical. Mm-hmm. This is not common.
But do you think it's about getting wiser?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's also a muscle memory.
Yeah, yes.
Mm-hmm. So.
So you're in high demand. I'm glad we were able to get you, or I would assume you're in high demand.
I mean, these days, infectious disease doctors are in high demand. You just need to have a pulse.
Yeah, it's pretty awful to say, but this must be your high season. I mean, just like,
it's
I'm so
both.
Sorry.
You it's know? Been terrible. It's been wonderful. Yeah. It's been exciting. It's been devastating, just like yeah. for everybody.
I'd just like to sort of get the local pulse, if you will, on things. Right now in Massachusetts, even though our show obviously is a podcast and we have listeners all across the country and even in different parts of the world, we were pretty hard hit here in Massachusetts early on. And then we saw sort of the proverbial flattening of the curve, or the actual flattening of the curve, which is what we desired to see, those caseloads coming down. And we were simmering down around 200, 250 new cases a day, which in some states would seem very high. But in Massachusetts, it was much lower than we were. And that was moving along nicely for 4 or 5 or 6 weeks. And now we're seeing, to my eyes anyway, a worrying uptick. What are you seeing, Dr. Sachs, just in terms of us here in Massachusetts and in New England?
You're absolutely right that the numbers are increased, but they're way lower than they were before. And because the people who are testing positive are younger, mm-hmm. we're not seeing cases that are as severe as in March, April, May. And as a result, our hospitalization numbers are still very low. I'm knocking some wood because we really want to keep it that way.
That's in some ways, that's good news. And we're hearing stories where, and I followed, I think, maybe a Twitter post of yours or a colleague's, that were saying we're really now looking at transmission, a major transmission factor being close proximity and being inside and things like that. And that's why we're hearing stories, at least here in Massachusetts, about parties that are happening and things like that. Those right. are the really worrisome activities.
Yes, absolutely. I think that we should focus on those high-risk activities. So that would be crowds, closed spaces, close contact with a person who might have COVID-19. And you really, if you focus on that, you could actually keep this thing from getting out of control again. Because as I'm going to allude to numerous times in talking to these two exercise fanatics who love to run, outdoor activities are about the safest thing you can do when it comes to COVID-19 transmission.
So yeah, that was a perfect segue. Let's look at running. So I'm going to assume that you're an advocate for solo running, certainly, that there's outside. There's not a lot of opportunity for transmission there. But what about, you know, Peter and I live in two different areas. Peter's in a very busy, crowded area in Brookline, and I'm sort of out in the western suburbs a little bit. And I can go for a 5 mile run and see two people, and Peter probably sees 200 or 300 even in the first 10 minutes. What are concerns and strategies in that situation?
There are two approaches to this. One is to, you know, wear a mask the whole time, and you wear a mask the whole time because it sends the right signal to people who see you exercising and know that by your wearing a mask, you're supporting the wearing a mask in public, which is really so critical in indoor settings. Another approach, which is more nuanced, is to not wear the mask when you're exercising and only really cover your face when you come near somebody. And even then, I would say the chance, even if you don't cover your face when you run by somebody, the chances of you transmitting the virus to them or vice versa are extremely low. And what we know now is that these kind of these sort of cursory contacts, these brief contacts with people, are really not how this is transmitted. This is transmitted by spending time with people relatively close to them in indoor settings. And if you think about it, if we go back to our Biogen super spreader event, and you're thinking you're at a business meeting, and you're all standing around holding drinks, talking to each other, and the place is a little loud, and you're raising your voice, and you have to get closer and closer, and maybe that part of the room doesn't have very good ventilation, that is how COVID-19 is transmitted, not by people jogging past you in the park.
And that then sounds exactly like a house party or, you know, a family funeral event or something. You know, these stories we keep hearing over and over and over again in different places. Yeah. Where
exactly. You've got it right. I mean, we've learned a lot about how this is transmitted. And, you know, for a while there, we were all so terrified, and we heard stories about people washing their groceries and about people, ordering from Amazon, and they put their packages out in quarantine for 3 days before bringing them inside. And really, there's no evidence that such activities increase your safety. So we infectious disease doctors haven't been doing any of those. On the other hand, you would be hard pressed to find an infectious disease doctor who would dine indoors at a restaurant right now.
Right. Or go to a bar.
Or go to a bar.
Yeah.
Well, right. But to that point, let's bring it back to running and say here in New England, gyms are opening. Yeah. What are your thoughts about that? I mean, I'm not going to a gym personally.
Yeah. I would say that a gym that has a very high ceiling and great ventilation is much better than a gym that has got a low ceiling and isn't maybe in the newest building or doesn't have ventilation, but they're both risky.
Classes outdoors, maybe.
Oh, absolutely. Classes outdoors would be great. And so a lot of the focus initially was on, you know, can you take the special wipes and wipe down the equipment? But it's not so much that. It's are you going to be near somebody who's breathing heavily, who's, you know, in the most infectious phase of the disease? We've also learned a lot about that, the infectious phase of the disease.
Talk a little just about that, because I think one of the greatest fears we've had for many months is the asymptomatic spreader. You know, you never know where the evil lurks,
right?
You know, and you could say, go for a run or do some other activity with someone who you otherwise think is fine, and then all of a sudden you've both got it.
Right. That's probably the biggest reason why we're in a global pandemic, is because if you just gave people advice, don't work while sick or stay home while sick, and everyone would be fine, then we wouldn't be in this mess. But it turns out that this virus, the peak amount of virus is probably in the 24 hours before people get sick and the day they get sick. So that's right there. And fortunately, it drops off very rapidly, and a week or so later, people really aren't very contagious at all. So there's this extremely narrow window where people can transmit the virus to others. And what that does is it gives us an opportunity to intervene, but only if we have very readily available and inexpensive and fast turnaround tests. And that's a technology that I'm obsessed with. And I work with a brilliant pathologist named Michael Mina, who's on the news all the time. And as I've said, I'm obsessed with this, but the technologies exist to test people regularly and cheaply. And once we have that in the hands of the public, then people will be able to identify when they're in that phase. And I that can't come soon enough.
Well, that's really both interesting and promising and frustrating at the same time. Oh. You know, if we all wanted to get together and do a mixed doubles tournament outside, but we all want to go get tested, you know, that day, a rapid test. Does that even make sense to do? Or are we going to have negative, you know, the golden ticket, or what's the situation
there? So here's the situation. First of all, let me just quickly parenthetically comment about doubles tennis, because that's my sport. And tennis, fortunately for me, turns out to be one of the safest sports you can do in COVID-19 era. I mean, running is also, so you guys are lucky. But let me just go back to this rapid testing idea. If people could get tested regularly, if they say could buy a pack of 50 tests for $50 and then test whenever they're going to be socially interacting with others, and the tests are just reasonably accurate, then they could know that they are not at the most contagious phase. The tests are being held up because the standards that we use for tests are very, very high. And we use the same kind of standards we use for people who are sick in the hospital. And we don't need a test to be that accurate if it's going to be deployed very broadly and the results come back very quickly and it picks up the most contagious people, which I believe these tests would. We just need the test to be good enough. And that's really a complicated issue to convey to regulatory bodies and to the public that a test that picks up only 8 out of 10 people with COVID-19 is really better, much better than nothing, but it is much better than nothing. And that's where I hope we're going.
So let me ask you this, doctor, because this is going to be one of the bigger things for people in the running world, which is, when do we see the return of races? Well, we won't really see them. And it's mostly because, again, it's hundreds of people all running in the same place. And that's not great. But it's really the pre and post events that happen around big races, yeah. You know, and certainly not that there's alcohol at the end of every race. No, but that lowers inhibition.
And a DJ and everything
yeah.
else.
Yeah. And we do a very fun race up in the dead of winter in Maine. But the secret to that is you go into the bars and restaurants afterwards,
right.
And all that's out the window. So the question, I guess, is, in your mind, where are we timeline-wise really for a safe vaccine? Because we're hearing all sorts of things right now because everybody's rushing, and that is the story.
Yeah. Well, the pace of vaccine development is faster than ever, which is great. But that doesn't mean that we have some magic way of finding a vaccine that works and is safe. We don't. We have to test it in people. And as you know, there's, you know, several studies ongoing. Probably the furthest along are this study that's being done out of Oxford, and another one by a government, a U.S. government and Moderna collaboration, and another one by Pfizer, and still more. And they're all kind of trying to enroll tens of thousands of people quickly into these studies. There's just no way we're going to have it, something that we know is safe and effective by the end of this year. But could we have something in 2021? I think we could. I don't know that we're going to know the full safety profile. I don't think that's possible until it's actually approved. So I'm not saying that that's out of the question. One good thing is that so many different people are working on it that we may be able to choose the best of them to really focus on. One other thing I just want to mention, since it's related to vaccines, is that we may have more immunity to this than the negative headlines indicate. And I say that for two reasons. One is that coronaviruses, which the cause of COVID-19 is a coronavirus, are circulating in the community already. And there now is growing evidence that probably the reason kids are at least partially protected from severe disease is because they get a lot of colds and they get exposed to coronaviruses all the time. So that's one. And the second is that people's immune responses to this are measured by more than just antibody tests. And there are very complex ways of measuring immune responses that involve cells, not antibodies. And it does appear that people do generate what's called cellular immunity that may protect them. So even though it was all gloom and doom when we heard that people's antibodies faded after several months, I believe strongly that they still have some protection from getting it again.
Well, speaking of timing of the vaccine and the idea of children being a little bit stronger in the immunity department, we're about to see in the next 4 to 5 or 6 weeks a shift, lower humidity, the cooler weather's going to move in. We've been so blessed with great weather and humid, hot weather, and outdoors is the place to be. But as we shift into what is typically known as like the time to get the flu shot, do you highly recommend everyone getting a flu shot by any way you can?
And right. So Peter, you're talking to an infectious disease doctor, and you just asked me whether I recommend that people get the flu shot. And the answer is, of course, I recommend that people get the flu shot.
I have to be.
I've been
I have
recommending
to be.
That people. You just threw me a fastball down the middle of the plate.
I have to be the devil's advocate. I have to just,
okay. So the flu shot is a moderately effective vaccine. It's not great. It's got a terrible reputation. But, you know, it does diminish the risk of getting the flu, and it diminishes the risk of getting severe flu as well. And I can just tell you, having now lived through COVID-19 surge in Boston when the flu season was still going on, that it was not fun to try to distinguish between the two, because you really can't. And so a primary reason to get the flu shot is you don't want to be that person who needs to be extensively investigated for COVID-19 because your symptoms overlap almost exactly, very close to what COVID-19 could be. A severe case of flu and a severe case of COVID-19 are very similar. So that's a good reason to get it. In addition to the usual reason, which is that we know that people who have medical problems in particular can get the flu and get really sick. And every year we have this uptick in hospitalizations and deaths from the flu. So we'd like to avoid that as much as possible. And then I have my own personal timeline for when to get it, which is people sometimes, you know, say, when should I get the flu vaccine? Because it comes available in the summer.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
right.
But you know what? I think it's better to wait until October. And so I say, when you start to see Halloween candy for sale in the stores, that's when to get it. Now, they may not sell Halloween candy this year, but I bet they do. That's a good time to get it, because the flu season lasts usually until at least February, sometimes March and April. And it is true that the vaccine does not provide that much immunity for that long. So if you get it in the summer when it first becomes available, it's kind of too soon for most flu seasons.
Okay, hard follow-up. So washing hands good? Kidding. Come on.
Good one. Good one.
Well, what are you going to do? But but there is going to be this move towards being indoors, though. The weather is going to shift. Yes. We can't be outside forever, unfortunately. Even runners who will go out for an hour or two in the cold, cold and rainy weather, we're going to have to come inside. What do we do inside? Ideally, being home is the best thing, of course.
Yeah. We worry about that. Just, you know, if we saw the shift in the epidemic in the United States from the northern states to the southern states, when the southern states, it was just brutally hot and they had to be indoors, that we're all concerned about that. I think that it does seem to matter how far you are from other people, which means that, you know, for example, the way we function in our hospital now is that we don't have big gatherings where we sit in audiences and are close together any longer. We move around a lot. We're all wearing masks all the time. So indoor activities that are not within your social bubble are going to require masking until we have either the kind of testing I discussed before, where you can test before social activity or work, or you're outside, you know, so it's masks are going to be required, or a vaccine ultimately.
And when at home, keeping windows open on a nice day, get the air moving.
At home, I assume people, when they're home, they are, they're with their social bubble. You know, that term social bubble describes the people with whom you've been living already. And those people don't have exposures that are very different from yours, and that makes what you're doing safe with them. So, you know, it's this virus enters into communities and social bubbles by people who come from outside, which is why the state travel regulations are in place. But in general, that is how people have been safely socializing now for quite some time. And it's something that even we infectious disease doctors endorse. It's crazy to just be completely isolated. It's crazy making to be just completely isolated. People have to have some social interactions. That's human nature.
That's absolutely true. And I think, you know, 5+ months into it, or however long we are, everybody's experienced some level of crazy making. You know, in some ways that has driven some runners to, there's sort of like this new running boom that's happening. You know, for a while you couldn't buy a bike. You can't buy a kayak these days. Good luck trying to do that. And sales of running sneakers I'm even in my neighborhood, I'm looking around every day. I see someone I've never seen running out there, and which is great. But for people who are running longer distances or more intensely, there's sort of a ongoing debate about whether or not hard training, and especially if you're training for a longer distance race, even if it's not a race, it's a personal event or a virtual race where you're not going to come into contact with any other people, whether that leaves you prone for infection because your immune system is down from, say, running a marathon or three really hard weeks of training. anybody who's concerned about this has tried to become a armchair epidemiologist or at least statistician. And the answers aren't satisfactory. I don't know if you have any insight on this.
Well, you know, I can tell you there is a body of literature about exhaustion in the immune system, and it's mostly related to sleep deprivation and sleep hygiene. And it's clear that people who are exhausted are more prone to get infections. And that just sounds like such common sense, but it has been shown numerous times that if you take people who don't sleep enough or take people who are stressed and can't sleep, et cetera, they get more all kinds of infections. So I don't know whether you can apply the kind of intense training that you're describing to that feeling of exhaustion, but there may be a lesson there for people. There's training that is like tough, and then there's training which is too much. And it might be kind of a common sense cautionary note not to push it too hard because we're in the midst of a pandemic. I think that's kind of the way I would phrase it.
Well, maybe tying those two things together and saying if your training is leading you not to get a good night's sleep, then you've gone too far, probably.
Yeah, that would certainly make sense. I mean, I shared with you briefly when we were chatting before, I did run one marathon in my life, and it was absolutely brutal. Even though I was a young man, I didn't train enough for it. And I can't imagine that doing something like that in the midst of an epidemic is a pandemic is a good idea.
You would have been fine. I can tell. Yeah, you would have been fine. What when we look at the geographical region that we're living in, the East Coast, and especially Massachusetts, when I look at the case numbers and you go more towards the West, it seems that the farther you get away, of course, from the city, the cases seem to go down. You go north, New Hampshire, Maine, Vermont, certainly. Is it just because people are more spread out? Does this thing just need people close together? That's it?
Well, you know, of course, the most important thing is cases per capita. Mm. And in less densely populated areas, numerically, you're going to have fewer cases, period. But if the question is, can this spread in rural areas also, the answer is absolutely yes.
Yes.
But just that the size of the outbreaks is much smaller. So, you know, there's been all kinds of outbreaks linked to, for example, workplaces in rural areas. And I think the one large outbreak that happened in Vermont, I think it was related to a basketball game that people were attending. I'm pretty sure it was. I mean, so it's all about congregating in that space where there's a potential infectious person and infectious in that phase that I described before, in that day before to day of the infection onset when the amount of virus is the highest.
And if we could, as humans, take 6-7 weeks, really be disciplined, not see anybody, never leave your pod, does this thing go away or no? It's still there, or do we not know?
Well, that 6 weeks is what they're doing in Melbourne, Australia right now, correct? You know, I think they're mm-hmm. on their third lockdown. I mean, the problem is that human beings won't do that. But let's imagine that they did.
We tried.
At a population level, and it would go away. I mean, it could arise again from an animal reservoir, which is what happened before. But, you know, maybe this next time we'd be more prepared. I do think, I'm just going to be tangential for a moment. Taiwan was prepared because they got hit very hard during SARS. And so when this thing hit, they essentially did what you just described. And now the occasional case that they have, they immediately isolate that person, identify all the contacts, and it's shut down again. So it's really behaving exactly as you said. If you can get this under control, it's under control. So that's the real problem with what happened in the rest of the country outside of the Northeast is that they opened up again before they'd even had very much spread. And so of course it then spread. So
in some way, yeah, we were both lucky and unlucky here. If you were lucky enough to go untouched in the Northeast through that first big wave, we were lucky enough to have it early and have a shutdown. I guess no one can see the future, though. Who knows what the fall is gonna do? I want to bring it back to a question specifically about athletes who, to no one's surprise, often think that they're immune to everything and untouchable, certainly when they get into a certain phase of fitness. But, you know, we're already seeing this with Major League Baseball, with outbreaks all over the place. And the U.S. women's Olympic rowing team had a rash of infections, and they were as fit as possible. So while you may be able to withstand either some infections or a passing glance or something like that, you don't have a Superman cape just because you're a good athlete.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. I think the thing to remember for young, healthy people is that even though COVID-19 is a much more severe disease in older people, there are the occasional cases in younger people that are very severe, that even require hospitalization and have long-term consequences. So, you know, I it's obviously a very small fraction of the young people who get this, but it is not zero. And you don't know which group you're going to be in, the lucky group or the group that gets slammed. It might have something to do with something called inoculum size, and that's about the amount of virus that a person's exposed to. It's relatively understudied, but it does seem that people who have heavier exposures get more severe disease than people who have relatively light exposures.
I want to, if I can do a deep dive question a little bit. I'm someone who suffered about a year ago from some blood clots in my leg. And when this thing first kicked up, they were calling it a respiratory virus. But since then, it's come sort of around that, well, no, maybe it's more of a blood, I don't want to say disorder, but I don't know the words for it. So you're the expert, so I would love to know more. But what is this virus really attacking?
So the virus, you're talking about SARS-CoV-2, the cause of COVID-19. What is it attacking?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we know that it targets the lining of certain cells in our respiratory tract, and then stimulates an immune response, which is good because that's how we clear things. But then that immune response in some people, after an initial phase of getting control of the virus, in some people that immune response then goes haywire and becomes overactive. And that's why there are all these descriptions of people who feel like they're getting better and then suddenly they're now having difficulty breathing and have to be rushed to the hospital. And in that second phase, when the immune system is overactive, that's where we see a lot of the other complications. In particular, since you're alluding to blood clots, the blood clotting. It's a dysregulation of hemostasis. That's the medical way of putting it, you know, where you have both clotting and bleeding, with the clotting predominating. In the people who require intensive care, the blood clots in particular can be very severe. We've seen it even in people with relatively mild disease, and usually in that second phase.
Does it tend to disrupt more organs than not? Is it the heart? Is it?
Yeah. So we, like many viruses, this virus is systemic. Even though people predominantly have respiratory symptoms, they also can have gastrointestinal symptoms where they have mostly diarrhea and nausea and vomiting. That seems to be more common in the elderly. There are cases where people, their heart is involved, their heart muscle. And since we're here in Boston, one of the Red Sox star players had COVID-19 complicated by myocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart muscle. There are now findings that some people get very bad neurologic disease, and indeed there now are follow-up studies of some people who've had MRIs that are abnormal of their brain long time after they've recovered. So if you want to be terrified, there's plenty of medical literature to be terrified. The good news, because I always try to find some good news, I'm an optimist by nature, is that most people recover fine. So looking at the most severe cases can make someone extremely paranoid. I think the benefit of that paranoia is it, I hope, pushes us to more responsible behavior in the community. So that's the benefit of being paranoid. But I don't want people to think that everyone who gets COVID-19 is going to have neurologic damage or heart damage, et cetera, because that's not the case.
So I think what I'm hearing is that we're not going to have any big races anytime soon.
I'm definitely hearing that.
We probably shouldn't be going to the bar.
Nope.
Probably not going to the gym for the most part, depending on how the gym is set up. But nope. Enjoy the good weather.
Yeah.
Go for a run. You can even go for a run with a friend
with
or
a friend.
Couple friends.
Yeah, sure.
As long as you're doing the right thing, especially before and after.
Yeah.
Wearing your mask, staying safe, and
wash your hands.
Wash your hands, and we'll see how the fall and the winter goes. What I have, you know, this might be another fastball there, but what would make your life better, Dr. Sachs, either, you know, locally or on the national level? You know, how could you see this playing out in other ways, or playing out differently?
Well, I can tell you that my dream in the short term is to have your local CVS or Walgreens or wherever sell you a pack of tests that I just described, where you can test yourself before socializing, before going to work, or that your workplace would provide them for you. You know, and tell mm-hmm. you before you come in today, you have to show me you have one of these negative rapid tests. Or let's even be visionary and say the federal government invests as much in this as they do in the latest fighter jet, and they get them to all the population. I mean, why not? This is a pandemic the likes of which none of us has ever seen, because the 1918 flu was the last time this happened. So we need to get those tests out there. And one thing that made me encouraged was that six states, I think you saw this news, are collaborating. Massachusetts is one of them, to try to purchase some like millions of rapid tests. Great. The federal government's not going to do it for us. Then the state governments have to do it. So that would make my life easier right now. The other thing that would make my life easier would be a federal response that is unified and science-driven. I don't think that's too much to ask. And it is something that we potentially could have, but we don't have it now.
Let's check back in January. There. Maybe.
Maybe in January.
Maybe. Are you comfortable with the state in which you live, Doctor?
So I live in the state of Massachusetts. I think we're doing a good job. We are facing some very big challenges in the next month or two with schools and universities reopening. I believe that people have to be realistic. There will be more cases coming because of that, both because you packed kids together in grade schools and in high schools, and they're clearly going to have infections. And then the behavior of college students, we've all seen them and we've all been there. They simply have a sense of invulnerability that many of them do, and are likely to socialize in ways that transmit the virus and could potentially become contagious to people who are more vulnerable. So I think we have to just beware of that and try our best to contain this so that we don't go back to the situation we had in the spring.
Yeah, I can tell you just on a personal level, I've seen just in the last week huge changes there, where I have a daughter who is entering sophomore year in college, and for her friend group and her also who goes to a larger school, they are not inviting students back. And that is just a change that's happened in the last few days. Whereas smaller schools are trying to, you know, create a snow globe and say, come back to school, don't go to town, don't leave. So we'll see how those two methods work.
It does seem that some schools have a testing strategy also, and certainly for colleges, especially colleges that are maybe not in urban areas, you could imagine how that might work. I mean, I would say that a testing strategy in colleges makes a lot of sense, especially if it's done frequently. And there's a coordinated response to people who test positive.
Well, in some way it's very similar to a workplace also, because you have just so much mixing of people throughout the entire day.
Oh, absolutely.
Like a typical office building. Yeah.
And the sports news today, the day we recorded this, was, of course, UConn is not going to be doing any sports, and they're a Division I school. And I'm curious if you think, Doctor, that that's the first domino to fall in some of the major colleges.
Well, I tell you that I love sports, but I'm not a fan of Division I United States sports, because I think already it's the resources allocated to it are grossly disproportionate to what the mission of universities should be.
Absolutely.
And I say that knowing that there are really smart, brilliant people who think nothing's more important than what the University of Michigan's football team does. Mm-hmm. To me, that's not what the University of Michigan actually is there for. So if they have to take a year-long hiatus from their football season, I'll live.
And I think I heard you say earlier, flu shot's good.
flu shot's good. Yeah, that was. I'm a big baseball fan. That was a fastball down the middle.
Dr. Paul Sachs is clinical director at the Infectious Disease Division at Brigham and Women's Hospital. And former runner, Brian. I mean, won't hold him against him, but he's a tennis player now.
Well, current tennis player.
Current tennis player. Yeah. Did you, we always ask our guests, how was your run today? How was your tennis today?
So I didn't play today. I played yesterday and I'm playing tomorrow.
Excellent. I hope you win.
Thanks very much. Really appreciate it.
Doctor, thank you.
Thank you so much. Nice to meet you.
Super. Appreciate it.
Brian, Dr. Paul Sachs, epidemiologist, general tennis player, and good person, just laid some
former marathoner.
One timer. Come on.
Don't take that away.
That's so true. 1979. That was when the Big Apple was the Big Apple.
Take a bite out of crime.
Well, that's
no,
McGruff.
That's not the same.
That's McGruff. Yeah. Not related.
Crime dog.
But I understand what you're saying. I mean, he ran a marathon when Mayor Koch was Mayor Koch. That's all I'm going to say.
How am I doing?
Okay. Yep. See, that six people got that joke, but that's fine. He was great. Thank you, Dr. Paul Sachs. Brian, what did you learn? What was the most important thing you got out of that?
I both feel great relief and terror. I have simultaneous reactions. One is right. I do not want to get this disease. I don't want to be cavalier because it is a crapshoot. You don't know what the repercussions are going to be.
That's right.
If you do get it. But I feel that what me and we're not individuals, of course, my family and my larger sort of group of anybody I see or interact with, which is pretty small, but it does include you, my friend, Peter.
Hello.
You know, not that we're really COVID pod intimate, but we see each other on a fairly regular basis, once a week or more. And we seem to be doing the things that were right or acceptable or keeping us safe, let's put it that way. And that made me feel good. You know, we're not having people come into the house and we're not going into other people's houses or we're not going to offices. Do what you want, folks. It's a free country, but I'm not going to a gym or a restaurant anytime soon. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And I'm not going to a theater or a movie theater. As much as, man, I would like to do all of those things tomorrow.
Sure, but I thought he was I thought he really found that balance between pragmatic and very realistic along with hopeful and optimistic. I'm going to go long term on this. I am going to believe that a vaccine really will be available sometime next year, but it could be another full year before it's actually available to us. And we just have to figure out the best way to live with this thing. And I get nervous about that. And he was very good to not really emphasize the second wave stuff, but we do have to be careful.
I think it's just going to be rolling waves, it feels like. But yeah. Right. If you could test your coronavirus
all the time,
level as easily as someone who has diabetes can test their blood sugar,
that'd be amazing.
I mean, come on.
Yep.
This makes everybody safer and it takes the anxiety level down and it's gonna we're just doing so much guesswork here.
Yeah, it's hard.
You know, especially with kids trying to go back to school and people trying to go back to work. He made a lot of sense and I really appreciate his time and his answers to our real questions and some of our goofier ones.
Brian, as the listeners can probably detect, you and I are not in the same place. We're back to doing this virtually. Now, some of that was because we were talking with the good Dr. Sachs today, but it's also because we're about to go off on a little vacation together where we're going to be in the same place for about a week. And who knows how many shows we might put together while we're there, huh?
Don't promise anything you're not willing to deliver. I'm sure there will be at least one. I'm not seeing a week's worth of shows.
Rumor has it. No, how about
that's
one?
Crazy.
I meant one show that that's, we would do together, probably on the exact same day that we ran together.
Absolutely. You know, you and I have only run once since Millinocket.
Since the COVID, yeah.
But certainly since the COVID. So since March 13th, whatever it was.
I think we did one. 15th. Yeah, we did a random Friday out there.
Yeah.
Up by you.
And we ran on either side of the road.
Well, it's going to be great. I'm very excited. And who knows? And according to the doctor, we could probably be 6 feet apart and not have the mask on.
That's what it sounds
like. Because we're outdoors,
like.
Yeah. And not face each other, as long as we're not running into each other continually. Don't you think that's big?
Yeah. As long as we don't go inside and yell at each other face to face for an extended period of time with the fans off and the windows closed, we'll be all right. I don't want to underplay it. I don't want to downplay it. It's a freaking pandemic, Peter, but I feel a little bit more hopeful.
That's all we can ask for, really.
I'm also scared to death.
Yeah, I washed my hands 14 times while we were talking to him.
I had to put this microphone down. It's giving me the creeps.
Hey, this has been episode 203 of How Was Your Run Today with Brian Gould and Peter Villa. Special thanks to Dr. Paul Sachs for joining us today. The music is by composer Jeff Cronenberg. Anna Brooks is our social media guru. Andrea Bonnie Gould is our artist in residence and is hard at work on that design for a fabulous new tank top.
Listen, you can join us every Saturday with your Sat Stat Chat and your HWYRT August Challenge updates. Just go to social media. That's Facebook, that's Instagram, that's Twitter. Also, if you need to know what's going on about this challenge, go to howisyourruntoday.com or hwyrt.com and click on articles. Then click on another link. That's just the way it works. And you'll see everything you need to know about the challenge. And if you're just hearing about this for the first time now, jump in now, week two. It's fine.
Just start where some people are. They went back to the first episode after listening to 200. They'll be in time for next August. That's the
exciting
part.
They'll be like, what's all this COVID talk?
Right.
That's not happening now.
What was that? We fix that.
Peter, I want to tell you, I want to remind you that this episode was brought to you by Path Projects. That's pathprojects.com.
Pathprojects.com. You can buy shorts, you can buy liners, you can buy shirts, you can buy hats. It's gear. Buy it.
At least one female listener has bought a hat and is very happy with it.
You mean the original superfan. I know. So yeah, these nippies that I have, I guess they make two versions. This one is a 3/4 inch and they make a probably quarter size, says extra. And let me tell you, Pete Villa is all about extra, especially in the righty-roo department.
Sorry, Tim.